Ladies and gentlemen, once again, we come to you in quarantine. We may run out of topics by the time sports returns, but...
I mean, that's actually a guarantee. We're going to run out of topics.
We talk about how crazy Florida is, but what happened was the first live-action semblance of sports to return post-coronavirus, or, well, post-shutdown, happened in my hometown of Jacksonville, Florida, as the UFC provided us with the first bit of live sports entertainment this past weekend. One of their star fighters, Ronaldo Souza, was at the top of the card, but he got tested for the coronavirus as he arrived in Jacksonville, and he got taken off the card and sent home to quarantine for 14 days. But other than that, apparently the Florida Sports Commission had no problems with UFC continuing with their card. And as far as I know, there have been no problems that have been leaked.
As far as we know. Like, we don't actually know anything.
Joe Rogan was supposed to do post-fight interviews, like, via teleconference, but apparently he was inside the octagon doing post-fight interviews with fighters.
No, goodness. I'm telling you, these fighting sports that, like, are just, like, we're coming back regardless. I mean, I know UFC has, like, some money issues, as do their parent company, Endeavor, but, whew.
Well, hell, Dana White was planning on buying a private island and hosting his fights on a private island during the shutdown.
I know, because, well, it's because the UFC needs to make money. They need this card. But I wonder how people even bought this fight, like, for real, though.
I bet a lot of people bought that fight. One of the undercard fights that aired on ESPN was kind of gruesome. One dude got his eye swollen shut, and it was blood everywhere. Yeah, so Jacksonville is apparently supposed to be hosting the UFC's next, like, three or four fights. So, yay for Jacksonville.
I mean, your governor did come out and say that Florida is open for all sports, and that if any team can't play in their state, that they will find a place for them in Florida. That is exactly what he said. So, I'm assuming that all the California teams are going to move to Florida because Gavin Newsom isn't opening that state for a while.
What else that happened was, I feel like this is something that we could have seen coming from a mile away. Zion Williamson is in the news because, well, he has an ongoing lawsuit with his former agency.
Yeah, he signed with, which is really sad because he signed with a woman first, right? Wasn't it? And then, like,
I think it was a black woman.
Yeah, a black woman. And then, like, left, like, immediately, and just seemed like there always seemed to be something shady in that situation. In terms of, like, he signed and then left really quickly. Like, I haven't followed the saga since it happened. I remember, but I do remember side-eyeing it when it happened because I was like, that was really fast. How is that person, how does that agent even had a chance to screw up yet? You know what I mean?
Zion parents apparently asking for gifts while he was at Duke.
So Zion's parents, that who, like, I had only heard a little bit of this story at this point.
The countersuit, I guess the old agency wants Zion to admit that him and his parents asked or accepted gifts from Adidas, Nike, like, while he was at Duke.
Okay. I'm going to say this way. All right. This is only a story because it's Zion and it's Duke. Because Duke thus far has been able to slide under the radar in terms of, like, paying players and doing the same stuff that every other coach, because Coach K is held in incredibly high regard. But I also think that Coach K knows the deal. And I do believe, I agree with this, that Duke has some, because Coach K coaches the Olympic team and has coached them to multiple gold medals, I think that there is a cachet that no other college coach has in terms of being able to play above board. But Nobody is playing above board in college sports. The question is, are you going to get caught or not? Like, that's literally the only question.
Yeah, Kansas is about to get nice, huge acts on their basketball program once stuff begins again. The NCAA said that their violations were very egregious, which...
I mean...
Duh.
The NCAA says everybody's violations are very egregious. I personally think that the NCAA is the one that's very egregious. But my opinion doesn't matter.
So now, but here's the thing. Zion is no longer at Duke. So is Duke going to get penalized if he admits that they...
I mean, technically they could be they could make him ineligible for his one season, which means they could erase that Sweet 16 run. I don't think anybody is going to be worried about that.
Nobody cares.
I was in the building for those games. They happened.
Zion is making NBA money now. He does not care. He can essentially admit everything, and it wouldn't have it. None of this will have an impact on his NBA career.
You're correct, but I will say this: players do not typically talk.
No matter what happens, whether something gets leaked or he talks, nobody cares.
I mean, I agree, nobody cares. But I will say, across the board, if you noticed, I don't remember an NBA player that's talked.
Or Zion was the best kid in high school basketball for 3 or 4 years. You should have known something like this might have happened on his way to Duke or any big primetime college program. But it is what it is, which is why the NCAA needs to hurry up and pass this bill to let these kids get paid for their likeness.
I mean, that bill isn't going to help anybody. I just don't know why to even say it beyond that. It's just not going to help nobody. It's definitely not going to ensure that anybody doesn't... It is not going to do what they should be doing. It's basically going to say you can have a YouTube channel and not be ineligible. That's essentially all. But then they're going to have so many damn restrictions on it in terms of, what you can do or what you can actually, promote. If you think that they're going to let Nike, openly have players in ads, you're wrong. He's not going to probably have that be the case. They're gonna try to seek to protect the sponsorships that the schools and the NCAA already have. So they're gonna have a lot of places that you can't actually, they can't utilize their likeness in still. Whatever.
Zion is supposed to be the future of greatness in basketball, in sports. But this episode, we look back on the past greatness as The Last Dance has bombarded our TV watching activities for the last month. So the last two episodes of The Last Dance were on Sunday, and for me personally, these are probably the two episodes that myself felt the most. They talked about his third champion, or the Bulls' third championship against the Suns, and how Michael retired and went to go play baseball, came back, made Space Jam, ended up winning the fourth championship on Father's Day. That whole period was right in the middle of my childhood. I remember I had a Michael Jordan I'm Back t-shirt.
Wow.
I remember the double nickel game against the Knicks in his fourth game back. I remember they got straight up jacked up by the Magic in playoffs.
I remember that because that's when I was still a Magic fan. And that was fantastic. I mean, I know he was wearing the 4-5, but it was so amazing as a Magic fan to watch that happen.
These two episodes also shed quite a bit of light on what it was like to be Jordan's teammate, especially when he didn't know you or didn't like you, as evidenced by the multitude of trash talking that he did to his teammates during practice.
Yeah.
And the way he tried to justify it is, I need to basically talk trash to my teammates so that they can be ready to play in games. I guess that works. I mean,
it worked because it worked. Ultimately, things like that people do that are borderline, like, abusive behavior. Borderline might be even more than borderline. I might actually have fallen across the line into abusive behavior. Those things only work, are only okay if they work. If they crush somebody's spirit, then they don't work. But I also know Michael Jordan, if they crushed somebody's spirit, he probably would have gotten the heck up out of there anyway. So it wouldn't have mattered.
BJ Armstrong, who was with the Bulls for the first three-peat, but then ended up going to Charlotte, he gave scathing comments about, like, how Jordan was and how basically he was, and you didn't know how to, it was awkward being around him, but you just didn't mind it because of, or it's not that you didn't mind it, it's just you learned how to deal with it because you realized how much of a competitor he was and how much he was willing to sacrifice to win.
I mean, what was he really sacrificing, though? Can we ask that question? Because, like, he was getting his way. He was being mean to people. He was being disrespectful. He was telling people that they couldn't eat. First of all, I'm mad that a grown man didn't look at him like he was stupid and be like, man, please hand me my food. Like, Horace Grant, I need you to handle your life.
Jimmy Butler said a quote. Jimmy Butler was like, yo, that couldn't have been me.
Right. Like, I just don't, like, I'm just like, because here's my thing. Michael Jordan was willing to do anything to succeed. But the reality is that he himself was not actually sacrificing anything. Everybody around him was sacrificing their dignity, their desire to be respected in order to conform to his definition of perfection. And yes, they all got a gain in terms of, like, they're all going to be remembered. They have those three championships. They all have infinitely more money than they could have ever imagined and notoriety because of that experience. But that's kind of what you would also say with an abusive situation, like in a marriage or a relationship. Like, people justify, well, he brings home the bacon. He does these, like, he or she is doing all these other things, so therefore the abuse is okay. Actually, in reality, the abuse is still not okay. Like, just because you get a positive outcome does not actually make the abuse okay. And again, Michael Jordan did not sacrifice anything. Like, what did he sacrifice? Because he was always going to be, already going to be the guy that was willing to, like, work the hardest, practice the hardest, do all those things. Like, he was already going to be that person. Like, he was already going to do that. That was ingrained in his personality. So what did he sacrifice? His ability to have relationships after the, like, he didn't care about y'all. Are they friends afterwards? Or any of, that's one question I'd like answered. Are any of, is Michael Jordan still friends with any of his teammates? Because, I mean, ultimately, I don't care what Michael Jordan says. Ultimately, on your deathbed, it's going to be the people that you remember, not the things. Like, maybe Michael Jordan's different from the rest of the entire universe, but
I've only seen him with Scottie, like, side by side, like, since he retired. I don't know about anybody else.
I mean, yeah, obviously, like, we didn't know that Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant were as close as they were. So, I mean, I totally get that, like, we don't know the personal relationships with these people that they have. But, like, let's be really honest. We fully and fundamentally expect that LeBron and D. Wade and Chris Paul and Carmelo will still be the freaking banana boat crew well into retirement. Like, we expect them to be as close then as they are now.
Meanwhile, Kobe adopted that, some of that abuse. I mean, there were stories. I forgot who told the story of Kobe telling all of his teammates that they had to take off his shoes because they lost a game.
And I think that, like, that is definitely, Kobe definitely tried to be Michael. Like, we all, like, fundamentally, every single person who ever, like, liked Kobe or followed Kobe knows that Kobe wanted to be Michael. Like, and Kobe himself says that he would not be, there would not be Kobe. Like, he said that in the previous episodes, that he, there would not be Kobe without Michael. I think the difference is, I do not think if Michael Jordan were to leave this earth today, he would that we would see anywhere near the impact that we saw when Kobe died. Like, I just don't think that the outpouring and the visceral reaction that you saw from players and coaches and anybody who came into contact with him, I don't think that would have happened. I don't think that's I don't think that that will happen for Jordan, even though he's in his 50s. Like, I don't think that that's going to happen. I think it'll be sad. I think we'll all mourn the fact that he's gone. But I do recognize that part of the Kobe reaction was the visceralness of it all. And just, like, he's 40, like, he's 41, like, he has his entire life. Like, he was so unexpected. And obviously, Michael Jordan is, what, 59 or something, like, 59? He's, like, he's at an age where death is more expected. So, therefore, like, it's not going to be visceral. But I still think even at that time, you're just not going to have that level of a reaction.
You think Steve Kerr is going to have nice things to say about him?
I mean, I think Steve Kerr has had nice things to say about him even throughout this documentary. Like, I don't think he's been mean, you know? And I also think that, like, Steve Kerr, of all of his teammates, do you not think that Steve Kerr walked away from the situation between Michael and learning under Phil? Do you not think that Steve Kerr walked away into his next career more capable of, A, doing things his way, but also learning lessons from that environment? Because if you think about it, I mean,
well, then Steve Kerr went straight from Phil to Pop.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely learned under the feet of some of the best coaches that we've ever seen. But I also think that, I mean, you don't hear that the Warriors, there's nobody on the Warriors that has a personality anything like Michael Jordan's, right? Like, they're all, like, they all want to win, but they also all inherently seem like nice people. And when you listen to Steve Kerr talk about his team.
But, yeah, so I brought it up because in that episode, Steve Kerr and Michael talked about the story where basically Phil put them opposite each other in practice. And I guess Phil was the referee during the scrimmage and kept calling fouls on Jordan.
Yeah, he called ticky-tack fouls.
And Jordan appreciated it, so he went up and, like, just straight up, I guess, gave a hard foul to Steve Kerr. And Steve Kerr was at that point where he was not going to take it. And he got back up in Michael's face, and Michael punched him in the face. He might have gotten a black eye. Who knows? I don't know, whatever. But I guess, you know, Phil kicked him out of practice. He felt bad, got his phone number.
I was like, got his phone number. Like, he's been your teammate for years and you got his phone number. Like, I feel like you should just, like, even if you, like, don't talk, and I mean, I get, no.
No, that he was only his teammate. That happened in their first championship year. Steve Kerr was only on that team. Either way,
like, don't you give a roster of all your teammates and their phone numbers, like, at the beginning of the season? Like, I'm so confused.
I don't know. This is the 90s. Who knows?
I mean, I guess. The Rolodex of all the teams. I mean, I guess on some level, I'm sure that, like, that garnered Michael Jordan's respect. Like, in terms of, like, he's willing to stick up to him and not just, like, I don't even know. I just feel like Jordan's a lot.
Our professor, Dr. Renaud, has written books on coaching. And one of the main things that I remember from her teaching is women bond to battle and men battle to bond. Basically, you got to go through the, for men, you got to go through the fire with somebody before you feel like you are a team. And women, they need to feel like they're a team first before they go and battle. And I mean, Michael Jordan is probably the
extreme example of that.
Yeah, he is this year's case study of that theory.
And I'm just going to go out on a limb and just say that the women's method is better because less people have to, like, get hurt and die or get hurt in any way to actually get to the point. Like, you bond and then you have hopefully the ability to, like, give people the benefit of the doubt. You know people are trying their best. You believe in one another. You believe in their abilities. You trust one another. And then you go into battle in a place where everybody knows what's going on and people believe in one another versus, like, men who then can easily devolve into name-calling and questioning people's motives and blah, 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 blah. I feel like Dr. Renaud is, like, one of those, like, that philosophy right there is, like, why women should run the world.
Michael Jordan calling all of his teammates hoes during practice was...
The pot calling the kettle black?
Yo, man, I couldn't take it. I really couldn't take it. This no player would get away with calling their teammates hoes during practice nowadays. None. I don't care how good you are.
I mean, I do think that one of the advantages to NBA players, like, knowing each other from, like, middle school on is that there's just a general level of, like, more respect that exists amongst the players. And also, but also, like, can we talk about, like, for a second, like, maybe it's just me, but somebody who inspires others to give their absolute best by supporting them and helping them and inspiring them, to me, will always be a better leader than somebody who does it out of, like, brute force or fear.
In so many spots in our podcast, we've talked about the all-time greats. And I've probably said this on more than one occasion that the all-time greats of a particular area in sports, whether it's Michael Jordan in basketball, especially with Tiger Woods in golf or Tom Brady in football, they all aren't really considered good people.
Well, but, like, Tom Brady isn't considered a bad person. And, like, or because I think there's a difference between...
I feel like the media, or not the media, society wants I feel like society wants all-time greats to be...
humble.
Yeah.
But I also think that there is a double standard depending on how a person looks in terms of all-time greats and who society expects to be humble. Like, it blows my mind that somebody who is seeking to be the absolute best in any given field is supposed to be humble. Why? If I am the absolute best and it is not a question, why am I supposed to be humble exactly? Yep. But if you think about it, it is only a specific type of athlete that is asked to be humble because there is still a perception that something is being given to them. Not that they've earned it, but that something is being given to them. That's why Cam Newton is treated differently than Tom Brady when they do the exact same thing.
To be even considered an all-time great. And then to get to that point, once you're considered an all-time great, your level of fame goes to another level. And I've said this, that when every single person wants a piece of you, and there's not enough time in the day, there's not enough of you to go around, some people are going to get the short end of the stick, if you will. And I brought this up as a topic because of instances that my friends have talked about with, like, you know, when they meet somebody famous and they didn't have a good experience. Like, somebody said, oh, well, Tiger is a jerk. Well, Tiger has probably had to be a jerk on more than one occasion. It doesn't help that he's also gone out of his way to help others at the same time. But when everybody wants to...
Celebrities don't get boundaries. Like, we as fans, not we as fans. I mean, this goes back to the 7 million episodes that we've done on, like, fans behaving badly and the fact that Fnatic is short for... Or fan is short for Fnatic. Fans do not see players as human beings. Mm-hmm. And that is why... Every time they act out of pocket, they do something that you don't think that they should. That's why every time people freak out, because it's not because they're human. It's because we see them as superhuman, and we believe that their lives are ours for the consumption. Mm-hmm. And that is why this happens. I remember I was on a rooftop in New York City hanging out with a girl that I know. I will not call her a friend because I don't think we're not friends, but like we were hanging out and we got into this like 2 or 3 hour long conversation about fans. And she was just like, you know, this person, I was like, I kept saying, but they're human. They don't actually owe you anything. Like, mm-hmm. there's this idea that because we support because our dollars, whether it's your cable dollars or your ticket prices or whatever, we somehow believe that because in some way our actions support their lifestyle, that we would trade them, or we think we would trade them for in a minute and do it for free. Because the other thing, like every fan thinks that they would play sports or do whatever for free, which is ridiculous. Or that this can't possibly be a job because it's a game. And it was literally, I mean, this was like the longest conversation. I was like, they are still human. They don't have to be nice to you every time they see somebody. Mm-hmm. They're allowed to be tired. They're allowed to be hurt. They're allowed to be in a bad mood. And you should respect their boundaries in the same way that you would respect the random person on the street's boundaries.
I've heard a few people that I work with, like one of them, she thinks that LeBron James is a complete and utter jerk, which... I feel like that might be a little bit out of pocket because
even I, who don't particularly like, I'm not a big LeBron person. I don't think he's a jerk.
Yeah. I just feel like there are always going to be people, especially of stature and fame, that they're not jerks. You just either caught them on the wrong day or
you stepped over the line, whether you're willing to admit it or not. Yeah. Because I don't care what you're doing. People walking up to celebrities when they are having dinner with their family are in an obviously what is a they're not trying to be seen situation. You get what you deserve. I'm sorry. Like, that is my 100% opinion. If you walk up to a person that is a celebrity when they're hanging out with their kids and wearing a baseball cap with gloves, with like sunglasses on, they're trying to tell you that they don't want to be disturbed. Hmm. So if you go disturb them, you get what you deserve. Sorry.
And at the same time, not all athletes are like that. I remember The Rock talked about this a couple weeks ago about like when he was first famous and he was at a restaurant with his wife and a couple had been like kind of just eyeing him and trying to figure out if they were going to have the guts to go say hello to him and ask him for a picture. And when they finally did it, he was kind of like very like disgruntled. But then after the fact, he thought about how much courage it took them to, you know, just come interrupt him and that he would never do that again. The Rock is a one-of-a-kind person because not every athlete thinks like but that.
Here's the thing. Whether he thinks like that or not, it's not about if he, The Rock, decides that he is never going to do that again. Mm-hmm. It's about the fact that he has the right,
yep,
to not want somebody to interrupt him while he is on a date. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He has that right. And you, as said person, don't have the right just to walk up to a stranger. Because at the end of the day, just because we feel like we know these celebrities does not mean we actually know them. We know what their public persona is, but how often do we find out that these players... I'm going to bring this back to Michael Jordan for a moment. Michael Jordan wanted to project an image of... a crafted image to the world. And he still does. But he also wore sunglasses to talk about gambling, talking to Ahmad Rashad, trying to play off that he wasn't a gambler. Like, yeah, Michael Jordan wasn't a degenerate gambler, as in he lost all his money, kind of gambler, but that's because he had zillions of dollars. So, yeah, he didn't lose all his money. But he was as bad of a gambler as we thought he was. And so, like, these people have flaws. They have private lives. They are not always good. That's why when things like what happened to Tiger happen, it's shocking because it shatters the image that it's crafted. The problem is that people don't realize that the image, every celebrity is showing you what they want to. So you don't actually know these people. Like, we don't.
And we talk about freaking Cam Newton. And I don't think we were doing our podcast that long ago, but everybody got on his case because he said, "Show me a gracious loser and I'll show you a loser." It's like,
and what's so funny about that comment is one of the biggest complaints that a lot of times you hear from fans of like teams and things is that the players seem to get over losses faster than the fans. Like, because at the end of the day, the players know it's their job. So yeah, I lost the Super Bowl. I'm not going to sit here and like not be smiling and laughing with my kid an hour later because my kid is still my kid and I love them more than I love this game, whatever. But like, fans always get mad because it seems like they don't care enough. But then when a player does react that way and they care as much as fans do, they're still criticized.
I mean, interview 9 times out of 10, if you interview any player that lost the Super Bowl, they're not going to be in a good mood. Like, any champion, any game, whatever, losing sucks, no matter who you are, no matter if you're the starting quarterback playing in the Super Bowl or whether I'm playing spades with my family on the weekend at a cookout. Nobody likes to lose.
And well, some people aren't always hyper-competitive. Some people don't necessarily care about losing, but that's also why people like us are not professional athletes where our job is to win. I just think that ultimately, like, all-time greats, and this goes for everybody. This goes for all-time greats in any aspect of life, whether it's playing sports or trying to achieve something that has never been done before, whether it's in politics or acting or directing or, you know, science or new technology or building a company or... high performers, like the upper echelon of high performers, have to have a sense of self that will border on neurotic. Like, it just is what it is. Like, Elon Musk is a perfect example. That man is crazy. Mm-hmm. But he's also literally trying to change technology as we know it. So guess what? Like, I don't have to listen to him talk. I do have his solar panels on top of my house. Like, I pay him every month. But he's also showing how neurotic and crazy he is relatively frequently. But, like, to do those things, to have the audacity to believe that you can do something that has never been done or you can ascend to the highest levels... you aren't going to be always the most likable human being on the planet. Yep. At some point, something's got to give.
Well, speaking of Tiger, Tigers is part of the slew. I guess slew is a little bit of a overkill of sports returning. On May 24th, Tiger is going to team up with Peyton Manning to take on Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady in a little golf match.
And can you guess who Courtney's rooting for?
Tiger?
Because it's not, because it's not the team with Tom Brady on it.
And, you know, as we talked about earlier, UFC had live sports, but I think most of the sports leagues are starting to get into a game plan for...
They're trying to find one.
They're trying to find one. And, of course, we all know that only time will tell if this is actually going to work or not, because ain't no telling what this virus is going to look like a month from now, 2 months from now, 6 months from now.
Yeah.
Apparently, Koreans are playing baseball.
But that's because South Korea did their job correctly, and they had... I mean, if you put the U.S.'s stats up against South Korea's, let's just say we failed miserably compared to what South Korea did. But they're playing baseball again, and ESPN is broadcasting it now because they need content.
Who else? Let's see. MLB wants to start their season at the end of July or in July.
And they're negotiating with their union, which if anybody's ever followed baseball and their union fights and their labor issues, that's been interesting so far, to say the least.
Yeah.
Basically, it comes down to money. I think everything with bringing sports back comes down to money, because at the end of the day, where we are in this cycle of this virus is people can get tested, but large groups are still the worst place to be in terms of the virus spreading. So fans still probably are not going to be part of these situations for anybody playing. Like Tiger and Manning and this whole golf match can happen because they don't really need any people. Group of people to a minimum. And ESPN's obviously already shown, like with the draft, that you can re-outfit your trucks, like your satellite trucks, to actually be able to give people the proper amounts of space and blah, 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 blah. So they can work through those things. So, like, yeah, they can play golf. Big open spaces. Also, being outside is actually safer than being inside with air conditions. Like, that's another thing about this virus, is because air conditions can move air. But putting 20,000 plus people in a confined space, inside or outside, still doesn't seem like a great idea. So the fights that a lot of the leagues are having is, if we play without fans, that hurts us financially. And what does that look like in terms of the percentage of our revenue that typically comes from the gate? And how do we then have conversations with our players and players' unions to figure that out? And that's where MLB is at right now, because at least for the MLB, they specifically had already come to an agreement for the 2020 season with the players, which is that they would prorate their salaries based on the number of games they played. Should be enough. Now owners are looking at, I guess what they're saying is, when they made that agreement, they didn't anticipate not playing with fans in the stadiums, which I feel like that was short-sighted, because the first things that were stopped were any large events. I'm like, still confused as how you thought the fans were going to come later. Whatever. So they didn't negotiate that. So now the owners want a 50-50 revenue split, which basically means the amount of revenue they get, because in Major League Baseball specifically, they're looking at, for each individual team, about 51% of their revenue comes from gate sales, 40% of the overall league's revenue comes from gate sales. So what they're saying is that they could end up paying the players, their salaries could cost more than like what they make per game. So the owners like don't want to lose any more money, which I guess I understand, but I'm not really usually on the owner's side, so I feel like they'll be all right. The NBA is looking at, they're prepared to play this season, like finish this season, without fans. But if they have to do it next season, you're looking at about 40% of their revenue coming from fans. And the NBA is kind of like, the NBA is kind of in a situation right now that like the hits keep coming because they already lost a ton of money from China earlier this year because of Daryl Morey. And China's still not saying they're still not going to broadcast NBA games if the NBA comes back. So that was like, you know, when Adam Silver said when they lost like $300 million from China alone, then now this, and then if they have to start the season in December, which was what they would be planning to do, start the 2021 season in December, they lose even more money. And what does that look like for them? So it's a lot of like the business side of sports that has to be figured out in terms of like, it's not just like playing, because like the business side plus the health and safety side, because the health and safety side, I'm still trying to figure out how they're going to do this. I saw the most interesting, it was on Twitter. I mean, I don't even know who said it, but they were basically like, you have to like accept the fact that more players are going to get the virus. That some players are going to get sick, like actually sick, and that they're going to be susceptible or spreading the disease potentially to their immediate family and those that they come in contact with. And if you can accept those things, then you can go back to playing. But there's not really a situation where that's not a reality. It's a little bit crazy, but let's be honest. This is America. We'll get there.
Well, we talked a lot about Michael Jordan during the course of this podcast. And with that, the last two episodes of The Last Dance will be this Sunday. And the way that they've structured this documentary is basically going to a certain part of the season and then going back to something similar in the past. Like,
yeah,
I guess these last two episodes are probably going to go from going back to the 97 championship and, you know, Michael Jordan and Steve Kerr magically make up because Steve Kerr hit the game winning shot for the Bulls to win the 97 championship. Everything is obviously going to culminate with the shot where Jordan, you know, because he's the great, because he's considered the greatest by a lot of people, he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt because he definitely pushed off on Byron Russell when he made that last shot against the Jazz. But that's neither here nor there. But yeah, it's going to be pretty good. And with that, I know a couple weeks ago, me and Courtney tried to have an Instagram live chat over a few of the episodes. We did it late at night, which was not conducive to our health nor the health of our listeners and fans. So with that being said, on Monday afternoon, we are going to begin having weekly Instagram conversations. Maybe it might be just me, maybe it might be me and Courtney, maybe it might be just Courtney, who knows. But if you're on Instagram, follow us. We'll pick a time on our Instagram page, Facebook, Twitter, and let everybody know. Monday, at some point, we will be reviewing the finale episodes of The Last Dance with everyone.
I mean, I think it will also probably be a review of the entire series. Yeah. I'm just going to tell you right now, as of up to now, I'm going to go on a limb and say that I think the biggest flaw of this series is that in many ways it is a Michael Jordan highlight reel as opposed to an in-depth documentary into who he is and who he, like, as a person. I think we see very few of Jordan's shortcomings, his kind of things that we didn't already see in the public in this. And I feel like it is kind of his Instagram because he had final say. So nothing in this makes him look really bad. But maybe that'll change in the last two episodes.
We're going to do this more. Now, granted, this is the third one we've done since quarantine. This will be the third one we've done since quarantine, which for us is a record.
On that note, stay tuned and continue to stay safe. We can't say that enough.
Right? Wash your hands.
Especially now that, you know, states are starting to open it back up.
Right. Really wash your hands. Really wash your hands. Don't put your hands in your face.
Wear masks.
Yeah, wear masks. Stay at home when you can. Don't go out and just go shopping because it's Tuesday.
And enjoy the finale of The Last Dance. Peas and chicken grease.
Oh, dear God. Bye.